good morning, afternoon. It's Tatum Devine. Listen, I already know some of you, your ways did not work this morning. And you got caught up in this accident, I hear, and Waze didn't let y'all know it was an accident. So you can't count on technology. Every now and then it will let you down. So I know some of you are caught up, and that's so frustrating when you are caught up and you have to be somewhere. I'm Dana Devine. How you doing on this beautiful halfway through the month of July, halfway through the year of 2023? I mean, we're like halfway. We're halfway in, halfway out. I don't know what resolutions you made this year. Good luck. I hope that they're working out for you. And you haven't given up. In case you're slow procrastinating, you still have 6 months to straighten it up and get yourself together. I want to just, on behalf of Equal Hope, say thank you for listening and remind you that this is an organization here to support you. We help underserved women, with free mammograms, and I can't tell you how important that is. It's an annual appointment, especially after 40, that you need to make, ladies. We also assist with free pap smear exams. We help get you a primary doctor appointment, like a first appointment, and that's important because your primary doctor establishes your baseline, you know, so when you come back and something isn't the same, they can look back and say, well, back then, now we're done, what are we going to do? So you get a chance, there's a baseline, there's a somewhere to check against. So you need that appointment as well, and this organization, Equal Hope, can get you all that. 312-942-3368. 312-942-3368. Write it down. Equalhope.org. And I said it once and I said it 1,000 times. If this information isn't for you, it could be for someone you love, and you just need to share this information. And that's what I need you to do, because you'd be surprised when somebody say, oh, I haven't had a mammogram in 10 years. And you can say, why? And they can say, well, you know, I stopped working. And you say, boom, here's an organization that can support you. Equal Hope. We're going to be at the African Fest this year. We're going to be, that's in Washington Park, September 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, I think. Yep. We're supporting it, and we're also going to be supporting that at the Black Women's Expo. Yep. We're out in the community trying to just meet you and find you and see where you are. So find us. Make sure you put that on your calendar, Black Women's Expo, August 4th, 5th, and 6th, I think. 6th, 7th, 8th. Okay, you'll find it. And also African Fest, September 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So yeah. And you know what? We're also going to be launching a restaurant tour. So I'm just letting you know, heads up. If you know anybody who owns a restaurant, a cafe, or ice cream shop, a coffee shop, and you think they'd be interested in participating in our restaurant tour, let us know. You can call the same number and say, I want to get some information about the restaurant tour. Equalhope.org, 312-942-3368. Now, I think I've said everything I wanted to say. Free mammograms, free cervical screenings, medical home, COVID testing and vaccination. Equal Hope can give you all of that. Referral for emergency services, food assistance, helping your utilities, and your rent. Woohoo! I mean, we gets it in over there. We works hard, y'all. And then every Saturday, we bring you the best in information. And today is no exception. Beyonce just walked through the door. And Beyonce is here to talk about advancing economic equity for all working women, because there's a gender gap that is persisting still in the United States. Women, particularly Black women, guess what? Are paid less than men on average. You didn't know that? Additionally, women are typically more impacted by recessions, and we experience a slower recovery. Having children at home, particularly young children, has a stronger impact on women employment rates than men employment rates. And women report that they are much more likely to have their job impacted by caregiving responsibilities. Like, my child is sick. There's a field trip. I'm nursing. None of that. However, there is reason for hope as the number of women continues to grow in the workforce. And policy changes, public policy changes are starting to happen and recognize these factors that undermine women's participation in the workforce. And that's what we're talking about today. Ladies, we're out here working. You know we're working. We're underpaid for our work. We already know that. And we're talking about it with Sherita Ellen. She's the president and CEO of Women Employ. I mean, she looks like a million bucks, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you so much for taking time out, Sherita.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy that I actually finally made it in studio.
Yeah, I'm glad you did too. And she looks great. So, Sherita, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into your current field.
Yeah, so as she said, I'm Sherita Ellens. I am a native Chicagoan, born and raised on the south side of Chicago, a product of our Chicago public school system, as well as our public higher education institute. I'm an alumni of Illinois State University. Go Redbirds.
Okay.
And so I have been a nonprofit, I would say, for the last 20 years. And prior to that, for about 10 years, I was in the private sector doing marketing and advertising and communications. And people always say, well, how did you get here? How did you get that? And, you know, it all boils down to three things.
Okay.
It boils down to preparation, dedication, and doing the work. And that's it. You know, you have to make sure that when you are afforded certain opportunities, you're prepared to mm-hmm. walk through those doors and do the work necessary to, you know, to succeed. And I have a nonprofit. I started off in marketing and communications and then had opportunities to be an executive director at the Southside YMCA. I have run business operations and communications at Skills for Chicagoland's Future. And in about 4.5 years ago, someone tapped my shoulder on LinkedIn. Those LinkedIn profiles are really important. Mm-hmm. A recruiter tapped me on the shoulder to interview for the opportunity for president and CEO at Women Employ. And the rest is history. So I've been there since February of 2019.
Bing, bing. I just wanted you all to, I heard everything she said, but my spirit jumped when mm-hmm. she said you should be LinkedIn, and for a whole bunch of other reasons that I'm considering, and something said you need to finally, you know, I've never LinkedIn.
You need to LinkedIn. So one of the things, and I know this might be a conversation for another day, but one of the main ways that people find jobs and opportunities are through their networks.
Right.
And the reason why women and people of color in particular, you know, black folks, that we don't get these opportunities is because we don't have the same networks as everyone else. And LinkedIn is a giant network. It is a place for you to showcase your abilities, to showcase your skills, to talk about what you're doing, and to engage with other people that are doing similar things that you're doing or that hold very similar interests than you have. And a lot of employers use LinkedIn and especially recruiters to find people. So it's really important to kind of build, as you're building your personal brand, your brand has to move beyond Facebook and your brand has to be in the places where people are looking. And LinkedIn is one of those places.
Mm, okay. I learned my lesson today, y'all. You can find me on LinkedIn next week. Look for me on some LinkedIn
because yes,
I will be there.
Use it.
So you're the president and the CEO of yes. Women Employ. It's a nonprofit organization. Tell us about that and the work you're doing there.
Yeah. So Women Employed is a 50-year-old organization. We're actually celebrating our year of 50 this year. And for the last 5 decades, the organization has really been working to pursue equity for women in the workforce by policy change, by expanding access to educational opportunities, because what we know is education and training is one of the greatest equalizers, not the greatest equalizer, as well as advocating for fair and inclusive workplaces, because we also know that as women and people of color enter the workplace, it is important that that workplace is welcoming, you feel like you belong, that the policies are inclusive, that you can thrive and that you're not facing discrimination, sexism, you know, all the things. Mm-hmm. So we work with lawmakers, we work with educators, companies and employers, community leaders to address the challenges women face on a daily basis in their jobs. And so right now we're really focused on growing the economic power of women in Illinois with a very particular focus on women that are in low wage jobs and Black and Latinx women. And so we fought for dozens of important policies like minimum wage increases, fair policies for pregnant workers, policies to combat sexual harassment and discrimination. You know, we work on advancing pay equity, which we'll get into today, securing paid time off for workers. We led the Chicago and Illinois paid sick time coalitions, which secured new rights for workers in Chicago in 2017. And then this year, the law that extended paid time off to an additional 1.5 million Illinois workers that did not have access to one single day off of work for any reason. Paid day off of work. And so starting in January of 2024, all workers in Illinois will have the ability to earn up to 40 hours of paid time off that can be used not just for sick days, but for any reason.
It kicks off when?
January of 2024.
Yep.
We work directly with policymakers and partners to amend the Illinois Equal Pay Act so that in 2019, one of those amendments was us passing legislation around no salary history, which bans employers and recruiters from asking you about your salary history for job interviews to be considered for promotions and things of that sort. So they cannot use your previous salary in consideration to hire you or to set your current salary.
And so it's illegal
it is absolutely
during illegal. An interview if they say, how much are you currently making?
It is absolutely illegal in Illinois. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason why we push for that is because if you were already underpaid, if you're already, you know, not getting what your worth is, and they want to base your new salary on your old salary that was not where it should be, then it continues to persist that pay gap. So it is illegal for any employer or recruiter to ask you about your salary history. And then this year we passed legislation around salary transparency, which will require, doesn't take effect until 2025, but it will require all employers to list good faith salary ranges as well as benefits, general benefits on all job postings. So you know going in the door, like, if this is a job that you even want to interview for, right? And what we do know is that majority of Gen Zers, they will not interview for a company that does not put their salary ranges on the job postings. Because it shows the character of the organization, and they're all about equity. And so they just won't even interview. So we just need to take a page out of their book.
Girl, a couple pages out of the Gen Z book, because they don't play.
They don't play.
They want the mental health together.
Listen,
they need to thrive at work. They do not play.
They do not play. My daughter is a Gen Z.
My kids are too, honey. If it ain't right, they're not working.
They not. They like get somebody else to do it.
Even though half time my mouth is like,
but I love it. I love it.
I don't like the way I feel. She doesn't. Oh my gosh. So
we won't get into that.
Yeah. All right. It's a whole nother show. Gen Z. Okay. So please define advancing economic equity for all working women. I think we know what it means, but there's some nuances.
Yeah, so what we believe is that when we center the dignity and economic advancement of women of color or those that have been marginalized or those that have the largest disparities, however you want to define that group, everybody rises. And so in order to do that, you have to do the work of equity. And so equity is different from equality, right? Because we're not all starting from the same place. and we're not all in the same place. So that means that in order to advance everyone or to make sure that I can catch up with you, I might need a little bit more than what you have because I need to catch up. There is a gap. So I don't know if you've ever seen this illustration of equity and you see people trying to look over a fence, right? And let's say the fence is 8 feet tall. And if everyone is given the same amount of blocks to stand on, to look over that fence, if I'm 4 feet, I'm never going to be able to see over the fence. If you're 6 feet, you're already there. You only need one block. But if you two, now you're still over here and, you know, I'm doing hand gestures like we're on TV.
No, so well, we're on Facebook Live.
Oh, okay. Hey, y'all. And so what we have to do is make sure that everybody has the number of blocks necessary for them to get to equal footing for everyone mm-hmm. else. And so when we do the work of equity, when we talk about equity, we have to take into consideration the decades of discrimination, of lack of pay, of sexism, of oppression, of, you know, all of these deeply rooted systemic issues that has held back people of color, that have held back women, you know, for so long. And so let's think about this. So, you know, and I was talking about this on a panel yesterday. It wasn't until 1974 where women were allowed to have credit and mortgages and loans in their own names separate from their husband.
Wow.
That's less than 50 years.
I was born.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so when you think about that and how long this country has been in place, So when you think about what women need to catch up, you have to think about that. And the same thing for, you know, for Black folks. You know, it wasn't until the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that, you know, outlawed discrimination for race and or gender and employment practices and lending practices. And then the Fair Credit Act came and all of these different things. But we know beyond that, redlining still existed. Right. We know that practices among lending institutions and developers kept Black folk insulated into poor communities. And so when you think about how we need to do the work of closing this wealth gap, of closing this pay gap, we have to atone and address all of those bad policies and bad practices that have been going on for decades to try to correct that. So that we can begin to close that gap. And it can't happen if every time someone gets a raise or every time someone gets the leg up, it's equal. Because if it's equal and you're already ahead, you're going to stay ahead. And I'm never going to catch up to you. I'm just going to get more than what I currently have. But it's still not going to be equal to yours because you're already ahead of me.
And so how does everybody benefit? Because we all benefit then from women's economic empowerment.
We do. And so when you think about, I think it's frozen, when you think about the economy and you think about if we close the pay gap, right? If we close the pay gap for women, it is said that if we just close the pay gap, more than 50% of women would roll off the rolls of poverty in half of our states. So we would almost end poverty, right, among women headed households if we close the pay gap. And we know that women, especially Black women, are 85% of Black women that have children are 85% of the time they're either the breadwinner or the co-breadwinner. So, and we know that Black women are majority in low wage roles. We know that that they're making less than, not right now, less than Native and Latinx women. We're all behind. But if we are able to uplift the wages, close the wealth gap for Black women, and I say people of color as a whole, because the wealth gap for Black folks is behind everyone right now. And so just think about how much more dollars are being pumped into the economy, right? Just for the economy alone. I think that they said that, and I need to pull my stat on that in terms of how much more, I think it's like $50 trillion that would go back into the GDP if, you know, if we address the wealth gap for people of color. And I'm going to get you the exact dollar amount on that. But just think about, you know, the decisions that then we're able to make, the neighborhoods that we're able to move into, you know, so we are able to put our kids in better schools because we're able to move into districts that have higher taxes, that, you know, have better schools. We make all the decisions in the household in terms of, you know, vacations and household items and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. So the disposable income that then comes along with that, that we then pump back into the economy. And so it's a trickle effect. All of these things are interconnected. You know, it's not just about you get your paycheck, but what do you do when you get your paycheck? You pay your rent. You shop for groceries, you pay your utilities, you take vacations, you buy household items, and all of that helps the economy run. Just plain and simple, right? Mm-hmm. All of that helps the economy run. And the more of that you have, the more of that you're going to pump into the economy. Now you can go out to eat. Now you can go to the movies. Now you can take your kids to the museum. All of those things help promote the economy and help promote jobs and then help businesses grow. It is a cycle. It is a cycle. And it's all interrelated with one another.
This is a little off topic.
Uh-huh,
but
go ahead.
Over the last week, they had the big reparations movement in Evanston and the payback. I mean, that's not exactly related to.
It isn't. And, you know, I think about, you know, me and some of my other friends that like to pontificate on things all the time, you know.
I love it.
we talk about that. And I don't know what the right answer is for reparations, because clearly they can't just cut us all a check, right? But where would it make the most impact? Would it make the most impact by saying, hey, if you are a descendant, an African-American descendant of slavery in this country, should you have the right to go to school for free? You know, should you, is there a thing that we can put in place like the military veterans have, the GI Bill, where you can come out and some type of benefit to buy property? You know, what are the things, knowing that we were held back from home ownership for so many years because of poor and discriminatory practices, what would it look like for them to correct that to level the field? And so I think when we think about reparations, we have to think more creatively about what that truly looks like. And it's not just, hey, we're just going to give a check to everybody. What does it look like to cancel my student loan debt that we keep fighting for? What does it look like, you know, for me to be able to have a certain down payment automatically to buy the home that I want? What does guaranteed income look like, right? To make sure that everyone is at the bare minimum making a living wage to be able to afford to live in this mm-hmm. city. So I don't know how reparations would work in a city as large as Chicago or in a state such as Illinois, but I don't think that we should shy away from the conversation around it.
Absolutely. You talked about equity, and I'm thinking about the big SAG-AFTRA strike. Mm-hmm. And I saw a post where, like, the CEO made $37 million. Mm-hmm. But you are fighting. You want, this is the disgrace what you guys are doing type of mentality.
So listen, in 2023, the CEO of Walmart made $24 million, which was 933 times more than the median of their workers. The Walmart, as an employer, has more full-time workers on government assistance, SNAP benefits, than any other employer. And so when you see folks out here and fighting for minimum wage, fighting for a living wage, and they're like, oh, you're being greedy, how can you do this? Well, greed Like, who's to say that as the CEO, and I am a CEO, but come on, like, as a CEO, that you should be making $24 million while your workers in your store can't even afford to keep food on their table.
Living wage, right.
Or keep food. SNAP benefits is food stamps. Like, at the end of the day, for people that don't know, so I'm working a full-time job, 40 hours a week, and I still need to be on public assistance. That's the disgrace. Where's the dignity in that work? And how do we say, where do we draw the line to say, no, this is not okay. And if there's enough money to pay you $24 million, there's enough money to pay your workers a living wage.
Greed, because greed. I, you know, you think of how, you know, just greed. I mean, you just want more and more and more. That's just, but okay. So, please, Sharita, give us an example of we talked about gender differences in the world of work. Can you give us some examples of the implications of those gender differences in the world, and so, like, maybe things that we should be paying attention to?
So, one of the things, and I always talk about this, is occupational segregation. And occupational segregation is also one of the biggest drivers of the pay gap, which essentially just means that women and people of color are shepherded into certain industries and certain roles. And those certain industries and those certain roles just happen to be
service,
the lowest paid jobs.
Service jobs.
Service, hospitality, domestic workers. And those are the lowest paid roles. And so the people that benefit from the higher paid roles don't look like us. And not to say that we're not there, but we're seeing in the for the majority, for the mass. And so occupational segregation is a big one. And then also there is this thing that we talk about called the motherhood penalty. And that's when, you know, women become parents. They're often seen as a liability in the workplace. And research shows that, you know, when women are mothers, they're less likely to be hired for jobs when they have kids. They're less likely to be given those promotions and opportunities at work because people believe, well, she's going to have to leave. She has care responsibilities or whatever the case may be. And it's the exact opposite for men. When men are fathers, they're paid more. And they're given the opportunities because they feel like they have to support their families, which is crazy when I just shared with you that 85% of Black women are either breadwinners or co-breadwinners in the household. So don't we have families to take care of, too? And then they passed over for leadership opportunities because they think that they can't travel. They can't go to after work events and things of that sort. And then also, you know that women tend not to negotiate for their salaries and benefits. And it's not like the employer is just going to give it to you if you don't negotiate for it, if you don't ask for it.
Right.
And those are all along, like, gender lines. And at the intersection of race and gender. I always talk about the intersection of race and gender because when you talk about gender only, then when you talk about being Black or being a Latinx woman, those things are compounded, which is why, you know, I always disaggregate the data when we talk about the pay gap, because white and Asian women are faring a lot better than Black and Latinx women.
You know, I want to tell you.
Checking your time.
Yeah. I remember when you were just talking about, like, in employment and how we are the lowest paid. And I recall a management course, and he was an old professor. He was, like, one of my oldest professors, period. Mm-hmm. And he said, by golly, some of the best darn ideas I ever got were from the most rank and file employee
Absolutely.
Of the company. Mm-hmm. All I heard was, sir, if you do it like this, sir, you know, you get a better result. All I heard was this Black man told me I implemented it and that probably promoted you mm-hmm. to the CEO mm-hmm. or whatever. And the best darn ideas mm-hmm. came from the most mm-hmm. rank and file mm-hmm. employee of the company.
And that's true. And I think, and that's why when we talk about inclusive workplaces, why we say it's not just a matter of the right thing to do, it does promote innovation. It promotes ingenuity. It adds to the bottom line. There is data that shows that the more diverse an organization is, especially in their ranks of leadership, the more profitable it is. Mm-hmm. It drives the bottom line. We know that when there's a project in trouble, if there's a company in trouble, if there's something that needs fixing, if there's a problem to solve, who do they call? Black women.
Mm-hmm.
Black mm-hmm. women. But they don't pay us for that. Our ingenuity, our resilience, our grit, our work ethic has value. And we have to start understanding that that has value and charging for it, basically, demanding that we're paid for that value.
Mm. So, Sherita, I hear you say that you're an advocate. You've been advocating lobbying
mm-hmm.
on behalf of women and compensation and equity. Explain the difference between paid leave mm-hmm. for all legislation that was recently passed mm-hmm. and paid family and medical leave you're still advocating for
mm-hmm.
and how can paid leave make an impact on equity. You spoke about how any type of advancement of pay for women impacts mm-hmm. the bottom line, but explain that for me.
So the and I know it's so confusing. So the bill that passed, the Paid Leave for All Act, was originally a paid sick days bill. And when we sat down with employers and legislators, they wanted to broaden it and say, you know what, let's just say that it's going to be paid time off for everyone. And which does create some confusion when we talk about paid family and medical leave. People should look at paid family and medical leave if you're familiar with FMLA. So FMLA allows you to take like a long-term disability, allows you to take more time off for a more substantial period of time. But unfortunately, with FMLA, it only pays probably about 60%, depending on where you are, of your salary. So if you're only making minimum wage, or if you're in a sub-minimum wage job, we can talk about that. When you're in sub-minimum wage job, or let's just say you're making a little bit over minimum wage, who can afford to only get 60%? So that means that I can't take that time off. Or if I take the time off, I slip into debt. And life happens. You get sick. Somebody else might get sick in your family that you have to care for, you know, and it makes it difficult for you to be able to do that if you don't have access to the means to be able to support yourself. So paid family and medical leave will allow you to take time off to take care of yourself or a family member in the most inclusive and broad definition of family that we can get past to at a higher percent of your salary. And the way that we are structuring this legislation is that it would act as an insurance, almost like your unemployment insurance, something that you, when you look at your check, you get something taken out for Social Security, you get something taken out for unemployment, and so you would get something taken out for paid family and medical leave. So the employee, the worker would pay a little bit into it, and the employer would pay a little bit into it. So we're talking a few bucks in your paycheck. But if you have to take that time off, you know, it's still in negotiation phase of what that percentage would be. But we're advocating to get it up to about 80% of your pay. And now that makes it a lot more accessible to people. 67% of Illinois workers cannot access their time off. They cannot take time off to take care of themselves or family. So that's why we need.
I know when she said that, I just started thinking. I'm sure everybody listening is thinking too. Golly, how much? What? I'm against the wall too.
Exactly.
Oh wow.
Exactly.
I have a million questions, but somebody else has a question okay. too. So let's take a call. Hey, James, you there?
Yeah, are you there?
I'm there. You got a question?
Okay. Man, you're having a good show here.
Good.
Let me see if I can get through this. The more things change for the enslaved of African Americans in these wilderness of North America. The more things change for us, the more things remain the same. Mm. Now, the great white father can cut us all a check and build institutions to support our uplifting. That is small potatoes for them. They intend to 12 wars right now. Nuclear submarine, spaceship, satellite, space station. They can do it if they want to. Now, these communities that call themselves giving us reparation is a trick. It is designed to mislead you. Reparations must come from government, France, Britain, Belgium, U.S. It do not come from some suburb down the road. That is to mislead you and to confuse you. Now, they have millions of dollars, billions of dollars for these illegal wars that goes back 30 years. But when it comes to reparation for us, oh, no, ain't nothing they can do. You got to have some suburb to give black people $2,000 apiece. That is designed to mislead you. Do not fall for that trick. And we're supposed to be in the U.N., but since the great white father controls the U.N., what you going to get when you go there? Listen, they right here in New York. Black people being shot down, assassinated here by the Blue Ku Klan every day. And you got a United Nation right here.
Listen, James, I agree with you. I trust you. I appreciate your comment, which makes the work that Sherita Ellens right here is doing so important, because it has to be policy change. You have to start with the change. And I just appreciate the work that you're doing with women employed, because you're advocating for change. So what policies that for women employed are you advocating for or recently passed that closes this gender equity gap? And it's like you are on top of quite a few changes. I'm so impressed. I'm like, how do you get that job?
How did I get that job?
No, I'm just kidding. But change, policy is, I say it all the time, it has to be policy change.
So one of the things that I am, that I constantly say is that I am so thankful that I got the opportunity to get this role, right? Because I knew about Women Employed when I was interviewing, but I didn't know the depth of their reach and their impact when it came to policy. And it is, to me, such a privilege to lead an organization where I get to direct what change we can affect for our communities in a big way. Because when you change policy, right, you change the trajectory for millions of people in one fell swoop. So one of the things that we talked about, I talked about the Equal Pay Act that passed in 2003, the no salary history. One of the other things that I want to talk about for that's a part of that Equal Pay Act is called the Equal Pay Registration Certificate. And these are guidelines that passed in 2021 that just went into effect in December of last year, 2022, which requires employers with 100 or more employees in Illinois to submit all of their employee pay data and a signed compliance statement to the state. And once they do that, they will be issued a certificate, and you will be able to go on to the state's website, and I'll find out exactly where they're going to put this information to find out if this employer has a certificate or not. Ah. So if they don't have a certificate, you know something went awry.
Right,
they're
right,
not in compliance.
Exactly.
Also, as a worker of any of those employers, you can write into the state and request the pay data for anybody that has the title that you have. And now you get to see if your pay is on par with everyone else. Mm. Right?
I'm always and checking salaries.
Right. You should do that. But not everybody, not all employers make their salaries public.
Right.
But this way, you will be able to have access to that information. The pregnancy fairness laws, which just means that your employer has to make reasonable accommodations and they can't discriminate against you. We passed that here in 2005, but it passed just this past year in the federal government. So now everybody has is the Pregnancy Fairness Act.
Y'all need to thank Sherita Ellis, y'all. I'm telling you, she got y'all on the map here.
We got the paid sick time in Chicago and Cook. And now, like I just told everybody, we recently passed the paid time off for employers, for all employees across the state of Illinois. Sexual harassment protections in both Illinois and in Chicago. And then Chicago just strengthened its sexual harassment prevention guidelines that says that supervisor has to take an additional training to make sure that they know how to address and handle certain situations. Mm-hmm. We advocate for financial aid. So more than $250 million in additional funding over the last 3 years has been added into the Illinois Monetary Award, MAP. Mm-hmm. So those of us that went to school in Illinois and looking for those financial aid dollars, that's what that is. And there was another bump. And we worked with the city and county on those guaranteed income pilots that they did last year. So what we're still advocating for that we're trying to get across the finish line is eliminating the sub-minimum tip wage. So a lot of people don't even know that this still exists. And the sub-minimum tip wage is a product and legacy of slavery.
Now that's why it still exists.
It still exists. And so where you find it most here in Illinois are, you know, people that are in the restaurant service uh-huh. industry. But there are a lot of tip jobs that are still here. And they don't make minimum wage. So I believe in Cook County, the tip minimum wage is at $7 an hour or something like that. Federally, it's less than $3 an hour. And it is the belief then that they're supposed to make up the difference to get to that minimum in tips. But we know that that doesn't always happen. And if it doesn't happen, an employer is supposed to make you right. And the systems of tracking that pay are flawed. And so wage theft happens. Not to mention, no one should be making, it's called a minimum for a reason. And no one should be making a sub-minimum. It's oppressive. It keeps majority of women in poverty, the people that make up industries that are at a sub-minimum wage, two-thirds of them are women, majority are women of color. And one of the reasons why it still exists is because there are some very powerful lobbyists and business groups out there who want to make sure that we keep that law on the books, because now, and I get it, restaurant industry, the profit margins are really low, but you got to figure it out. It's the cost of doing business. Everybody else has to figure it out. You need to figure it out, because no one should be working for sub-minimum and depending on tips for their livelihood, because it opens individuals up for harassment and other things as well. So that is one of the things that we're working on. We're working on eliminating the student debt and advancing measures for racial equity in higher education. So making sure pathways are accessible. And we're doing a lot around development education reform. There is a provision in the Higher Education Act that we're really trying to make sure that students know about, and or community partners know about, and that community colleges know how to administer. And it's the ability to benefit, which opens up access for individuals as long as they have a high school diploma or equivalency, that they can tap into federal financial aid dollars for adult training programs. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people don't know that that exists.
And how do they find this?
I know. It's one of those things. And we have it on our website. We put out information. But that's one of the things that is so important. It's like, how do we, shows like this is important so that we can get this information to the people that aren't reading that information. I was just having a conversation with one of my friends this past weekend, and she's like, girl, you need to do videos. You need to do TikTok. You need to be in places where people will hear this and tell it in not policy wonk talk, but in just everyday language, so that people can understand what their rights are. And so that's what I'm dedicated to. And Women Employed is really dedicated to making sure that we get information out. For the past 18 months, we've been working with the Illinois Department of Labor because we received through them some grant dollars to educate people about pay equity. And so we trained almost over 80 women throughout the state of Illinois, and these are women within their communities, to teach them about pay equity and how to get that information out in their communities for themselves.
Okay, we're going to have her back because this, she's making a difference. These policies make a difference. Listen, thank you so much, Sherita Ellens, for stopping by. She's the president and CEO of Women Employed, and I like that. Just Women Employed, real simple, nothing simple. Thank you, Jay, Titus. We'll be back next week talking about building a strong foundation for young mothers. Remember, if you need a mammogram, a cervical screening, any type of assistance like that, give Equal Hope a call, 312-942-3368 or equalhope.org. I'm Dana Devine. Thanks for hanging out with me. I promise you, I tell you every week, I bring you the best information. And if you're a woman and you're employed, then you need to check it out. Stop by the website. What's the website?
Womenemployed.org.
Boom.
All social channels at Women Employed.
Women Employed. That's simple.
Plain and simple.
There you go in life, y'all. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.